from being the drummer with 80s hit band Scritti Politti, to now running teamwork events and helping businesses and corporates to build their teams. My guest this week has had a very varied and interesting career, but one thing is true. He has never lost touch with his roots. Rhythm is what got him started. Rhythm is what keeps him going. And rhythm is a very important thing for all of us, personally and professionally. And that's a little of what we're going to be exploring in today's episode.
You're listening to the Keith Blakemore Noble Radio Show. Here's your host, Keith Blakemore Noble.
Hey, hello, hello. Welcome back. Welcome to another episode. I have got a fabulous guest with me this episode, as you can see. It is one person, but we can see all four angles of him, and you'll find out why a little bit later on. It's fantastic. I'm so thrilled to have Tom Morley with me. Just let you know, for those of you who don't know who Tom is, just a brief, very brief bio. Following his time in the music business with the 80s band Scritti Politti, Tom has developed a truly artistic way of living where every experience leads him to the humorous uncovering of some universal truth. Instant teamwork is Tom's speciality, and it's zooming in and out like mad there. It's Tom's speciality, and it's also the name of his company. Team building, be it drumming or harmony singing, is all very energizing on the day, but how do you make that bonded feeling sustainable? Tom's devoted the last 20 years to answering that question, and he turns up with a customized set of tools which he is passionate about sharing. He's turned his disasters and his successes into stand-up comedy for conference audiences. 40 years on stage, first behind a drum kit, and then being the multi-talented frontman for whole troops of performers, have earned him the name the Rockstar Activator. That's my guest today, the Rockstar Activator himself, Tom Morley. Hey, Tom, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. I haven't heard that intro for a while. I wrote it probably a year ago. So I'm quite impressed.
always nice to be reminded of who we are. At least you're not going, no, that intro is completely rubbish now. Oh, that's totally changed. We've heard your bio, and you've heard it for the first time in a year. We've heard your bio, but who is Tom? Who is the man behind all of this?
Whenever I'm asked that kind of question, I generally start from the day that the question is asked. So today, I just heard my wife on a work call. It's her first big work meeting. She works with quite a small training company, but they're having a big sort of Zoom meeting. Welcome back. And she said, we had a great time over Christmas. We got a purpose for ourselves, and that purpose was to put lights around each other's hearts. So rather than we've just got to slog through Christmas, you know. if you're asking me who I am, I'm the sort of person who can come up with something like that and go, yeah, we'll live by it. And so consequently, we did things like, you know, there's certain things you can't do in London anymore because of lockdown, but we got properly masked up. We booked ourselves into different shows, different exhibitions. We did some quite unusual visits, as well as going to Matthew Bourne's Nutcracker, performance of Nutcracker, which was absolutely amazing. But also we went to a house in Spitalfields. It's someone Seffers. I've forgotten his first name, but he was a kind of fabric trader, manufacturer in the 1800s. And someone has fixed up his house as it was at that time. And you go into it, it's candlelit. It's all quiet, but it's silent. There's no chatting. You're not allowed to take any photos. It's candlelit and it's dark. And, man, there's this, I don't know if you know that Hogarth painting where there's lots of people sitting around the table, they're drunk, there's a table falling over, someone without a wig, you know. He's pretty much created that room. So you walk into that room, and because everyone's silent, they only let a few people in at a time. It's just my wife and myself in it. We got ahead of everybody else. You just feel it, you know, and then you go up to the maid's quarters where it's all rough hewn shelves and stuff. You know, it's all really authentic. You know, they really researched it. So anyway, I could go on about that, but the who I am is someone who kind of looks out for those sorts of experiences. And why? It's because I need to be inspired myself. I do a lot of inspiring, and I need my own input. So, but the great thing is, and why I'm starting it now, if you ask who I am now, I used to do quite a lot of that stuff on my own. And it was so great to just share it with my wife and her to share her creative life, me to share mine. So that really has come out of lockdown. Because we've done a lot of things together during lockdown, even if it's just walking in the park when the planes stopped. There was no traffic in Richmond Park. They closed it to traffic. They even closed it to cyclists. So we were walking, if you imagine us walking through the park with deer walking alongside, because all the animals became a lot more friendly. It's like living in a Disney movie for the first 3 months of lockdown.
Beautiful. Yeah. I'm just saying, it's two key things I picked out from there. One, I love the line, we put a light around each other's hearts. I love that. Mm. That is such a great line. And I like the way you said, whenever you're asked this question, you always address it from where you are right now, which I think is a very important thing. So many of us kind of overlook. Who are you? Well, and then we immediately talk about who we used to be, where we've come from, but no, it's who are we now? Because we are constantly changing and evolving. Yeah.
Yeah. And who I am now, of course, is based on who I was, you know, when I was 5, when I was 10, when I was 15. So I could have started, you know, and gone chronologically. In a way, I am going chronologically. I'm just going backwards.
Yeah. Yeah. No, quite. I like
that. We will get to when I was 5 fairly soon.
All right. Brilliant. We'll look out for that.
Before we dive into a little bit more detail, just want to say thanks to this episode's sponsor. It's sponsored by another podcast, Newton's Nuggets. It's run by Paul Newton. You may have come across him before. He's been a guest on a couple of our previous episodes. He's also a brilliant magician, and he runs Mental Theft. Check those out as well. But Newton's Nuggets is run by Paul Newton and Jesse Lawrence. And it's a great little podcast. Newton's Nuggets delves into different aspects of the life of a modern business owner, providing bite-sized nuggets of advice, information, and the stories behind the people who are experiencing the journey to success. I love the podcast. I've been a guest on it a couple of times. I love many of the guests that they have on there. It's a great little podcast. If you like this podcast, you're really going to like Newton's Nuggets. Check it out, newtonsnuggets.com, or you'll find it on iTunes, Spotify, all the best places. Check out Newton's Nuggets, but not before you've listened to the rest of this episode. Now, where were we? Oh, yes.
So, you're the rock star activator. I've got a whole lot of questions about what all that is. Just before we dive into that, a key part of what you do as a rock star activator are these team building activities, and that they are, I mean, if anybody's listening to this or watching this thinking, oh, team building, oh, it's like the whole build a rope bridge and get 6 barrels across. It's none of that. Your stuff is absolutely epic, and it's all around, as one might guess, given your background, it's all around, brings in rhythm and all this sort of stuff into it. So team building exercises, what do you think is the most common reason for team building exercises to fail?
Well, nobody wants to work in a team. Who would? You know, we're individuals. We live in a society that stresses individuality, partly to separate us so we can be sold separate items or separate services. Yeah. And I don't say that as a conspiracy. It's just evolved that way. Yeah. If people make more money if we're all separated. And we've got used to it. We like it. You know, we don't like I say, that whole thing of me going out with my wife to galleries and showing her pieces that, you know, I learned about at art school. I'd never thought she'd be interested in that. But, man, we've just had this brilliant time kind of describing each other's worlds to each other. But when I read The Artist's Way, you know, it said go on an artist date on your own. So even creative books and consultants say, you know, drive a different way to work. You know, do all these things on your own. Mm-hmm. So of course, we don't want to work in a team. Other people have ideas. They don't want to do it the way we do. They want to do it slower or faster. They want to do it in a different place. So consequently, we have to discover what the cave people knew was if we, you know, hunt the mammoth as a team, we're more likely to pull it down than if we just go on our own. So you wouldn't have got The Artist's Way in Stone Age times saying, go and hunt the mammoth on your own and have a lovely artist date. You'd have just starved to death. So we have to, between those two things, between this individuality that is stressed in the West, I mean, really, isn't it?
Yes.
To a kind of crazy degree. So we have to come somewhere between this place where we cooperate and then, I mean, the whole thing of why it works, team building, I can't persuade anyone. Look at me. Who would listen to me? But I can give them the experience of it working, and then they go, oh, I see. So there's no magic in it. It's like the ABC of working together. But because they hardly ever do it, they think it is magic. But it's very simple.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. And you're right. Individualism is such a massive thing in society these days. Not that it's bad that we're individuals, but as you say, it can go to the extreme where we kind of lose touch of the benefits and the essentialness of being part of a team as well.
Yeah. And we cut ourselves off from the neurochemistry of working with people, which is all those, I mean, that's the irony of it, and that's why it appears to be magic, is that when you work as a team, you get flooded with all these chemicals that you go out to buy individual items for yourself in order to get that chemical hit. Mm-hmm. You can have it just by singing with people, walking together, by bonding. Yeah. I mean, and it is... the bonding doesn't happen straight away, but very often it happens as, again, you know, it's ironic because the movies we watch on our own are movies of people coming together around a crisis, you know, be it the Titanic sinking or Towering Inferno or whatever, you know, many earthquake, many stories coming out of Hollywood are see how these people bond in a crisis. Well, do you know what? We're in a crisis. We wake up, you know, whether we admit it or not, we wake up in a crisis as the film, you know, Don't Look Up. Was it called Don't Look Up? Yeah,
Don't Look Up. That was the one, yeah.
Which everyone's moaning about. It's not aesthetically pleasing. It's not to my taste. I think the script was a little bit ragged. I mean, the thing about Don't Look Up, which everyone, I should write a review about it, but it should get an Oscar for timing. Forget about the acting. Forget about the plot. You know, they timed it to release at Christmas when everyone was busy consuming, was a bit bored, binged on Netflix all year, you know, and here's someone with a story with a beginning, a middle, and an end, and you can talk about it with the family. So the timing was brilliant. We are living in that crisis, and really we should start the year knowing that. And I think everything we do, well, not everything, say 80% should be geared to thinking, am I helping things here or am I just hindering them? So if we all did that, then, you know, someone posted on LinkedIn, driverless cars. What do you think of driverless cars? If the energy that was put into driverless cars, because there's a profit in it, if the energy was 10% of that energy was put into, let's all get together and do something about climate change, something concrete. You know, but that the frustrating thing is, and what that movie is saying is that we could solve it. We have all the technology to solve it. We've got the imagination to solve it. We've got the money to solve it. You know, billionaires don't need billions. No, with it, we could still have the same amount of billionaires in the world if we left them with 1 billion and took the rest off them, and everything would be paid for.
Yeah.
Poverty. Climate change would be reversed. There'd be no poverty. There'd be no children dying of drinking dirty water. It would be gone. But somehow we let those billions stay in their bank accounts doing nothing, and they were all earned from from surplus value, which those people accumulated. You know, it's bizarre.
I guess the irony is there's no profit in saving the environment, which is the ultimate irony, because if we don't save it, then it doesn't matter how much profit you've got when we all die off anyway. So
it's a collective madness that we let it go on. And the biggest irony is if you speak to any of those billionaires, you say, what's the most valuable thing to you? They say, my children. I love my children. And they're destroying their children's future. They don't love them. They're hooked on, I know what they're hooked on, but they're not hooked on love for their children, because you only have to point that out.
Very different if they were.
Yeah. If they love their children, then save their planet.
Yeah. Give them something that they can have after we've gone.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what they're giving them. They're giving them a bunker that they can live in with staff. But I read recently from a reputable guy, Jamie Wheel, who I know, I've done some work with. He said he heard of a conference or a meeting that a lot of these billionaires had, and with a top futurist, and the futurist was thinking, great, you know, I can help them spend their money to save the world. But what they wanted to ask was, when the event happens, the event to them is either a disaster or it's revolutionary, it's something anyway that threatens their way of life. When the event happens, how do we stop our security staff from plundering our food and water supplies? That's what they wanted to know. Do we tag them with neck tags that give them electronic shocks? They can't pay them because money won't be worth anything.
Yeah, exactly.
So that is their main concern, how they look after how they keep their security stuff on board.
Crazy, isn't it? Crazy.
Well, that's the thing. It's not crazy. It's our reality. That is the crisis we wake up in every morning.
Mm. No, I mean, it's crazy that that's their mindset, and that's the way they I feel we could talk about this for ages.
What else do you want to know?
I feel we could talk about this for ages, but I know we also need to talk about the thing that you do as the Rockstar Activator.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask the question, what is Rockstar Activation and why do we need it?
In business terms, it's called discretionary effort. It's the effort that you bring to things that you don't need to. Most people can do their job run at 50%, but sometimes they get excited. There might be a deadline. There might be a project they particularly like, so they'll put a bit more effort into it. It's the kind of effort that you would bring to a hobby. You know, if you're learning surf, you wouldn't go, well, I said I'd do 9 to 5. I was just getting it, but it's 5 to 5, so I'm frustrated. I'll have to come back tomorrow. You would be surfing till the sunset to get that move, you know. So the whole Rockstar Activator thing is to get that going in people in everyday life when they're not surfing. So I'm not addicted to doing it in workplaces. I just want people to do that to live that way, because that is enlightenment. You know, this whole pursuit of happiness that's written into the American Constitution is a big mistake. It's very banal, the pursuit of happiness. We should be pursuing flow, which Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi says, you know, it's found at the crossroads of discipline and surrender. That is exciting. Happiness, you know, happiness just comes and goes. You can buy it. But flow, you can't buy it. You just got to get into it. So really, I'm a purveyor of flow. I call it the groove. You know, I took Mihaly's words and I say groove is found at the crossroads of discipline and surrender, because the crossroads turns up a lot in popular songs, especially blues songs. It's when you get down on your knees. And when you get down on your knees, you surrender. You know, that surrender is, people don't, they say, what, give up? But all you just give up what you, all the stuff you are relying on for your security. You have to give it up to find a new kind of freedom. You probably know that story of, the rich man not being able to get into heaven. It's easier for a camel to get through the eye of a needle. Do you know, I mean, some people say this is an apocryphal story, but I like this story. I'm not religious, but I like this story that the gates of Jerusalem were kind of oval-shaped. Do you know this? And so during the day, a camel could get in loaded with goods, so all the merchants could go in. But at night, they just had this side door. So in order for a camel to get in, they had to take all the goods off it, and it had to get down on its knees, and camels then could shuffle through on it in through this smaller door.
So
and it was called the eye of the needle. We have to lose everything. It doesn't mean we have to die. We've just got to lose all that stuff that we accumulated, get down on our knees and shuffle into the future. And so that's really, I've forgotten your question now. It's something about the Rockstar Activator, but the surrender is anybody who's lived and really thought about the world has probably been depressed in their life at some time. And again, that surrender, it's a dark night of the soul. I wouldn't recommend it to anybody, but when you've been through it and you come out alive and you lost everything, but you're still alive and you have a chance to rebuild the Lego bricks that you like, you go, never liked that one anyway. So you build yourself and your own little life back again, like a little Lego thing. You think, I'm not copying that thing that was on the box. I've invented something more. I told you something was going to come out of this that I'd never said before. I never thought of that. You don't build a life that was on the Lego box. You just take the bricks and go, do you know what? And then, you live accordingly. So that's what the Rockstar Activator thing is about. It's about kind of smashing everything up, putting it all back together in a way that you individually want to put it together. That's the important thing about teams. It's full of individuals. People say there's no I in team, but there's an I in building, and I build teams. There's also an I in tribe. And the eye is right in the middle of tribe. So I'm just riffing here. Ask me another question.
Yeah, I could listen to this all day. Seriously, no, I love that, and you touched there on how we do have to kind of just let go of everything so that we can move forward. And as you say, instead of building the thing that's on the Lego box, actually build what we want to create. We got to let go of our preconceptions of what it should be. I'm guessing, like everybody, yours has been a lifelong journey, because we're all on a lifelong journey. We don't suddenly one day go, right, complete sudden change, usually. But, I mean, what kind of led you to divesting yourself of all this stuff that you no longer needed?
Well, I think that journey began when I was a teenager, because I was shy. And I could just see that I was never going to get laid if I was shy. But I could also read the room. You know, that's the thing about introverts. We read the room all the time. So I'd go to teenage parties and read in the room. I'd think, why is nobody dancing? They all want to dance. I can tell they want to dance because they want to see each other move and kind of perform sexually. So I just thought, well, I'll dance. I would just walk into the middle of the floor. I'd have to drink a pint of cider or something and just start dancing. And at the time, because that was, what would that be, 60s. So there was a group around called the Crazy World of Arthur Brown. And Arthur Brown used to do this dance, arms, legs. He was wearing I didn't have that at the time, but kind of a helmet with fire on it. So I just used to dance like him. It had a term I learned from Woodstock. I wasn't at Woodstock, but I was the Isle of Wight the following year, called idiot dancing. So I was an idiot dancer. But what that did was it gave other people permission to dance a bit, you know, more laid back, maybe a bit more sexy and slinky. They might come and join me for a laugh. They might. But I thought, oh, well, this is easy, you know. I got a lot of attention. I always got invited to parties. I developed this thing. I mean, I must have been 15. I thought, oh, this is easy. I just got to turn up late. I'll drink the cider on the way, turn up late. As soon as I get there, get in the middle of the floor. Then everyone said, wow, Tom, as soon as you arrived, the party kicked off. I never told anybody. Do you know what? You could do this.
Yeah.
I pretended it was something about my personality. And you know, I've been doing that ever since. You know, I do it. Like I say, this whole rock star activator thing is someone's just got to do it. I know it's in the room that they want to break out. This whole business about get people out of their comfort zone, that where we go with that movement, with that expression, with that connection, with those chemicals, that is our comfort zone, right? That's where we belong. What people call the comfort zone is repressed, sitting still, not making a mistake, tweeting, I'm at a conference, it's not very good, but I'm doing the right thing, I'll just keep my head down. You know, that's meant to be that's not comfortable. Nobody's comfortable being there. So if there's one thing I could bring to the world, it would be this. But whenever I talk to people about it, they go, no, the comfort zone is where people are. But they're not. They're worried about their school fees. They're worried about insurance. They're worried, you know, it's uncomfortable. But because of hegemony, we think that is our comfort zone. It's nonsense. You know, if you're visiting from another planet, you go, right, I see, that's your comfort zone where you're sitting still worrying. And over here where you're dancing or drumming or connecting or, you know, making hats and putting them on or whatever, or playing with your children on Zoom on a corporate conference call, I see that's out of your comfort zone. They go, well, you people are mad, because let me tell you, from a Martian's point of view, That looks like your comfort zone. That looks like your discomfort zone. I will go to my grave not having explained that, but certainly that's where it all comes from. And that's but I'll tell you this, right? If I'm on every summer I teach on a Greek island for 2 weeks, where I do actually have a chance to get to know people more than at a conference. And if at the end I say, after 2 weeks of singing, drumming, open mic in the bar, you know, whatever we do, surfing, swimming together, there'll only be 20 people. If there's one word, what would it be? And some people say energized, free, da, da, but very often people will say home. I feel home. They're way away from home. They've been doing stuff they wouldn't do at home for 2 weeks. They're connected in a way that they wouldn't connect with strangers. But they say, yeah, I feel home. And they don't even say it. I feel home. They just go, yeah, home.
Mm.
And that's where we belong. That's where I can feel it now. And, of course, part of that is because black, white, rich, poor, we all, if we're alive, then we lived for 9 months with our mother's heartbeat being home for us. Nobody can deny that. So, yeah. And that was the only kind of stimulus we had, really, or sense of security. So,
yeah.
Rhythm. Yeah. Anyone who says, oh, I don't respond to rhythm, I haven't got rhythmic bone in my, you know, I go, well, I mean, I believe it. I believe that's what they believe. But there's no way they were born not feeling all right around their mothers, unless their mothers were stressed for the whole of the pregnancy, which is, you know.
Possible, yeah.
It's possible. But she wouldn't have been when she was asleep. So.
Oh, no, you're right. Yeah, I never kind of put that together. That because rhythm is, yeah, we all love rhythm. You'll find everybody at some point or other will be tapping out a rhythm in whatever way, whether they're tapping along to music or whether they're just impatient and they're waiting there.
Yeah, yeah.
Tap, 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 tap. You're right. I guess our very first sense would be our mother's heartbeat while we're still in the womb.
Of course.
As rhythmic as you can get.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so I think that's probably what comes out when people say home. And they sometimes say it with surprise. They go, yeah, I feel home. I think that's, we've got back to a sense of security from, and thinking about it, it's almost because when we're in that circle, nobody's doing anything, nobody's drumming, nobody's singing, we've stopped, we're still. It's the end of that day or maybe the end of that course. So we're just standing there being peaceful. Oh, yeah, feel home. That's probably what we felt in the womb. You know, another day of this. Hope she doesn't give birth soon.
Yeah.
Wow. trying to stop those waters breaking.
Yeah, yeah. Clinging on there, clinging in.
Yeah, that's right. That's distract her. Have some strawberries on.
Yeah.
Have another strawberry.
Yeah.
You know you want one.
Yeah. I just want to. Yeah, I mean, we've got to kind of wrap up fairly soon. But before we do, I just want to kind of touch on creativity because obviously a lot of what you do involves creativity. Do you feel everybody has creativity in them? Because I know there's a lot of people who sort of say, "Oh, I'm not creative. I have no creativity." Is that true, or why do some of us feel that we haven't, and yet others of us kind of exude creativity?
I think it's because, well, I mean, you'll know these stats that people say. You know, when we were kids, we were geniuses. Well, it's something like 95% genius rate under the age of four. I mean, really, we haven't got long. So I would say watch Sir Ken Robinson's TED Talk are schools killing creativity? We were creative.
Oh, yeah.
It got bashed out of us.
Yeah.
Not by bad teachers, not by anybody being misanthropic in the education system. Teachers are absolute heroes, in my opinion. But the curriculum requires them to win prizes, to elevate the top people in sports or art or music, get them to win a cup for the school or whatever. So the curriculum works against nourishing individual creativity.
Yeah.
And it was designed for how we used to work 100 years ago. It's bonkers now. And it's especially bonkers because the captains of industry are saying we want creative people.
Mm.
But what's the last year been? Pivot, be flexible. What have people been doing as a way of surviving? Watching Netflix. You know, people start saying, yeah, the production, they know what production values are now. They know, you know, blurred background. You know, even it's so ironic that Zoom come out with a blurry background. It used to be called depth of field
in
my day, but it's called blurry background now. So everybody's developing these kind of aesthetic things in lockdown. But they're all just delivered. They're delivered at a touch of a button. What we've got to do is buy an SLR and learn how to create blurry background.
Yes.
But we knew all that. We knew it all as children. And again, if we go back to my time when I was a cave person, then we had to know all that. We had to know how to be creative. We couldn't go, oh, I'm just going to, I think I'll throw a blunt stick at the mammoth.
Yeah.
It might work. We'd sharpen the stick and then we'd learn how to sharpen it better. And then we'd learn how to throw it, you know, with skill.
Mm.
I think you can get an app for killing mammoths now. You don't have to do anything. You just go, yep. Oh, it's dead. Great.
Onto your app yes. And order your pre-killed mammoth.
Yeah, mammoth app. Yeah.
dear.
Yeah, KTM, kill the mammoth.
Yeah. Tom, it has been an absolute pleasure. We could talk about this for until the cows come home, I suspect. Thank you so much for taking the time out. For those of you who are Patreon supporters, check that out because Tom and I are going to be jumping on there in a moment. We've got a few other bits we're going to be talking about and sharing about. Might even ask him to play a little bit of drums for you. You never know. But for everyone else, thank you so much for joining us. Please remember to like, comment, subscribe, share it with your friends. Tom, if people want to find out a bit more about you, find out more about Rockstar Activation, maybe get in touch with you or even hire you, because I know you do amazing team building events for businesses and companies large and small. What's the best place for them to find out more and get in touch?
Well, you could look on my cave wall and you'll see scratch there is something. It's called the internet, and it says tommorley.com. That's it. If you can remember that, and then go to the contacts page, and everything is there. All my Instagram. I tend not to do a lot of Twitter, but Instagram, Facebook. I'm addicted to dopamine, so I'm always on Facebook.
Brilliant.
It's all there. tommorley.com. Morley for Morley.
Excellent. So just head on to tommorley.com. You'll find out a whole lot more about Tom. As he says, he's on some of the socials as well. You'll find all those links on Tom's site. You'll also find them in the show notes for this episode, which you'll find in the usual place, keithblakemorenoble.com/show. Look for the one with Tom Morley. You'll find out more of his details there. Tom, thank you so much for taking time out to be my guest today. It's been an absolute pleasure. Dear listener, thank you for joining us as well. I'm going to leave you with Tom's favorite quote. It's a beautiful one from Maya Angelou.
people will forget what you said. People will forget what you did. But people will always remember how you made them feel.
You've been listening to the Keith Blakemore Noble Radio Show. To find out more, please visit KeithBlakemoreNoble.com.